Welcome to Obesity, a Disease, the official Obesity Medicine Association podcast exploring the many facets of the disease of obesity. Obesity, a Disease podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Medicine Association, the clinical leader in obesity medicine.
Welcome. My name is Dr. Harold Bays, Medical Director and President of the Louisville Metabolic and Atherosclerosis Research Center, located in Louisville, Kentucky. Welcome to this program entitled Obesity, a Disease, the official podcast of the Obesity Medicine Association. In these series of podcasts, what we do is we look for recent articles that have been published. Many of them are published in our journal. The name of the journal is Obesity Pillars. And then we try to get one of the authors, one of the expert authors to comment, maybe give us some insights as to what went into the construct of these publications and what was the intent of the message. And the article that we're going to discuss today is entitled Frequently Asked Questions to the 2023 Obesity Medicine Association Position Statement on Compounded Peptides, a Call for Action. And if I want to be clear, this is a frequently asked questions to a position statement that the Obesity Medicine Association put out in 2023. And we are just so fortunate to have with us today one of the co-authors on this paper, and it's Dr. Courtney Youngglove. Courtney, why don't you tell the folks who you are and what you do?
Thanks, Harold. Yeah. So I am an obesity medicine physician. I began my career as an OBGYN, practiced that for almost 20 years, got boarded in obesity medicine in 2014, really was passionate about the field. And a few years later, hung a shingle, left my career as an OBGYN and decided to practice obesity medicine full time. And it's just a field I've fallen in love with and own two practices now, two different clinics in the Kansas City area. One's in Lawrence, Kansas, one's in Kansas City proper in one of the suburbs. And over the years, I've gotten very interested in advocacy and really bringing obesity medicine to the population and led me to the OMA. And now I'm on the leadership council of the OMA and very involved there and am living in the trenches of obesity medicine.
Well, that's, you know, having that sort of practical care of patients, I think is just so important when we're talking about this. You know, sometimes I think people would consider it to be somewhat controversial. It's the use of these compounded peptides, products that are generated by specific pharmacists and such. So they're not the traditional prescription and such, not in the way that people normally do that. And I think people have a lot of questions. So in 2023, when there was a position statement, we thought we covered a lot of it, but there were so many questions. And so the idea of this, this publication was to address those questions. So there's no way we can cover, you know, all the questions that are in here. It's granular, probably a lot of questions that if you read them, you're like, yeah, what is the answer to that? So I would highly encourage people to read not just the 2023 position statement, but this frequently asked questions, because I think it's got a lot of very practical, useful information. Perhaps one of the best things about this paper, it's got a checklist of, you know, about 10 things that if you're going to engaged in compounded peptides or prescribed compounded peptides or have patients on compounded peptides, having that checklist is going to be really important. And I guess the last thing I would say is it's interesting, you know, that at the end, one of the calls for action is to get everybody together. You know, the pharmacists and the pharmaceutical companies and the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, and obesity medicine specialists, and let's get together and come up with some clinical and practical guidelines and such so we can navigate these issues, especially during times of shortages of the drugs that our patients need so much. So let me just get get back to you here. I mentioned this a little bit, but let me get your kind of input. So we just had this position statement in 2023. What is it that caused the Obesity Medicine Association to feel like there needed to be follow-up on that initial position statement?
Well, I think the landscape changed. I mean, it's still changing. I think it changes almost every day in this field lately. But I think when that first position statement came out, this world of compounding anti-obesity medications was relatively new and very uncertain. And I think over the following year, it settled into different buckets. It became much more socially acceptable. It became much more widespread. And I think there were just a lot more nuances that we hadn't addressed in the first position paper. And the field was shifting. I mean, there were a lot of obesity medicine clinicians that were doing things differently and had very strong opinions about that. And there was a lot of controversy within our own community. And I think it was just time to dive a little bit deeper.
Well, look, and I think it's exactly what's stated, in this publication. It says implementing these solutions necessitates dispelling misinformation and providing clear guidance on appropriate prescribing and administration of compounded peptides, particularly during times of acknowledged shortage. I want to be clear, we're not nothing about this should be perceived as anti-patient or anti-pharmacist or anti-anybody. What it is to acknowledge that some of the compounded peptides have proved to be problematic. Well, I'll let you answer that. It doesn't happen all the time. I think a lot of people said it doesn't happen most of the time, but there certainly have been instances where administration of compounded peptides has had undesirable consequences. Can you speak to some of those?
Absolutely. I mean, we've had case reports of people getting tainted compounded peptides. We've had case reports of people getting insulin instead of a GLP-1 agonist. We've had people pass away from getting something in a syringe that they thought was a GLP-1 and it wasn't. And I think that is scary to those of us in medicine that are used to having a pretty regulated system of when we say something is going to be something, it is. And this opened up a world of that's not necessarily A to B to Z.
Well, and for clarity, just so everybody knows, and I think it's stated quite up front in this review, in this frequently asked questions, for people for compounded pharmacists, it's just like anything else in life, isn't it, Courtney? It's like there are people that do things the right way and are ethical and diligent and are doing things in the best interest of the patients, but there's always somebody that's got to go rogue and do things in a wrong way. And when people do things in a wrong way, that can have adverse outcomes. So again, nothing about this should be intended to just cast this wide net or accusations, against anybody. There's acceptable ways of doing compounding is legal. There's nothing illegal about the process. And in many cases, it's very useful in certain circumstances for the individual patient. But as you correctly stated, it isn't just you saying this, by the way. The Food and Drug Administration has noted specific examples where the use of compounded pharmaceuticals has had deleterious effects for our patients. So I guess that brings to the next question. So you have this uncertainty as to whether or not all situations of taking these compounded peptides, whether it's safe, not safe, and such, what are the patients getting? How have you dealt with that in your practice? So say there's a clinician out there listening to this podcast, said, okay, yeah, I'll go read that and everything, but give me an overview about how it is that you manage these patients who come in and say, I'm thinking about using one of these compounded pharmaceuticals. What do you think?
I mean, we've pivoted multiple ways, trying to figure out how do we do this. We have very little coverage for the FDA approved anti-obesity medications in our area. So it's just financially a barrier for most of our patients. So we've really looked into, could we make this happen? Could we do this ethically? Could I stand behind something? Would I feel good about it? I mean, I think that's why I agreed to be part author on this paper, is I spent probably 40 hours of my life diving into the process of compounding of, okay, can we find a pharmacy that's PCAB certified? Can I talk to the pharmacist? Can I see where they get their API? Can I see where they're getting their product if they're getting it from a 503B pharmacy? What do those look like? I think I spent probably 18 hours one weekend diving through FDA reports of investigations into all the 503B pharmacies in this country, and what did they say, and did they get them reconciled? And I mean, I really went down a pathway of, could this be done? Could I find a way that I could feel good about it? And I will tell you, at the end of that pathway, my team and I looked at each other and said, not yet. It's just, I don't feel good enough about it. I don't feel like I could get the same product over and over again safely. And we might rethink that. I'm not saying we wouldn't, but there are so many gray areas between A to B to Z that we didn't feel good about it. It's been hard. It's not been a black and white issue. And I think we're probably all grappling with it differently.
Well, look, and I think people are going to have a sense about the complexity of this when they heard you throw out about, four or five abbreviations there in just a few sentences.
It is complex. I mean, that the
regulatory agency,
who regulates it, and where do they get their product, and who regulates that product? And then who, I mean, it is complex, and I wanted to understand it. I mean, to me, I don't want to just jump into something because it feels good or it makes the patients happy. And I certainly don't want to base clinical decisions on, well, everybody else is doing it, so it seems okay. Or a lot of anecdotal stuff that I think a lot of people are using of, well, so far it's been good. I mean, to me, that's not enough. It's not good enough.
Well, look, just for the listeners, I would encourage you to go to the article. I think it's fairly in-depth. I think, I mean, it's straightforward. It's all practical information. It's not anything people can't grasp. It's just that this is a complex field, and somebody needed to do it. Somebody needed to sit back and say, let's come up with an objective discussion of this topic and talk about things like, I mean, you mentioned API. What is API? Active pharmaceutical ingredient. So if you don't know what that is and you're thinking about using compounded pharmacy, I mean, I think you do need to know what an API is. You mentioned 503A and 503B facilities and such. If you don't know what those things are, probably a good idea to figure that out. Go someplace and get that information. And all of these things that you kind of, again, rattled off with all these abbreviations and such, all in the paper, all in the publication. And I would just encourage people who are considering this or have heard from colleagues, whether positively or negatively. I'll ask you, I don't think this is not an advocacy article. It's not a condemnation article. I just think it's a factual article that outlines the issues that need to be considered for patients who, you know, maybe they're in their minds, they're thinking, is this compounded peptide right for me? And as I mentioned, we even have a checklist and such of people to you know, look into if this is something that either they or their patients are considering. And so I'll just leave you the last word here. What do you have any final thoughts on this article and how it might help clinicians and their patients?
Other than I think it needs to be read fully instead of just reading a summary. I've had people reach out to me and say, I can't believe you wrote an article that's so paternalistic that says don't use these. And yet in a matter of a day, I get another reach out that says, I can't believe you wrote an article, you know, advocating for the use of compounded peptides. I'm like, Well, I don't think the article says either one of those things. I mean, I think maybe we're reading it with bias as people, but I think looking at it and saying, what is it we're trying to say here? I think we're trying to say, we're not going to be paternalistic and tell you what you have to do. I think our goal was to say, if you're going to do these things, here's best practices for doing them. I mean,
here are both, you're not going to hear this very much, How about a review that gives both sides? Let's look at this from all sides. Rather than, like you said, gravitate to one extreme or gravitate to the other extreme because we want to appeal, you know, to a certain demographic or whatever. No, I mean, at the end of the day, it's the clinician who's got to guide patients. At the end of the day, it's the patient's decision as to what's the best thing for the patient. So I guess the overall take was, let's just give an objective assessment of reality. And I think, like, well, how about this? If somebody tells you, one person tells you, this sounded like an advocacy article, and the other one says, I can't believe it says nobody should be on it, then you probably did something right. You know what I mean? If you're getting criticized on both sides, you probably hit the sweet spot.
Right.
And as you said, many times people read into these things what they want to read into it, not what was actually said.
Right.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. Courtney, this is fabulous. I hope people take your advice and go over these questions. I think it'll be beneficial to clinicians and their patients and such. And again, the article is Frequently Asked Questions to the 2023 Obesity Medicine Association Physician Statement on Compounded Peptide, a Call for Action. Okay. And as I mentioned several times, I just think that having the facts so that you can objectively, counsel patients, I think that's a good way to go. I think that's a good way to go. So thanks to you. Thanks to you, the listener. You've been listening to Obesity, a Disease, the podcast by the Obesity Medicine Association.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Obesity, a Disease. For more information about obesity medicine podcasts and other valuable resources from the clinical leaders in obesity medicine, please visit www.obesitymedicine.org/podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode and want to listen regularly, head over to iTunes where you can subscribe, rate, and leave us a much appreciated review. The views expressed in this episode are those of the host and guest and do not necessarily represent the opinions, beliefs, or policies of the Obesity Medicine Association or its members. Please join us again for our next episode of Obesity, a Disease.